All right, time to look through the window of baseball brought to us by Truitt and White, the professional builder's choice in Marvin Windows and Doors. And Bruce Jenkins of the Chronicle joins us. Bruce, good evening to you. Early evening. How are you?
Hey, Bruce.
Hey, guys. What's going on?
Well, we're out here at the Public House, and everything is well with the local nine. They are playing a heck of a good baseball.
It's just amazing, isn't it? I mean, one stage they're losing eight in a row, and now they're in first place. I mean, it happened in a way that just seems completely plausible. It's not really that shocking. You know, you're so used to seeing these guys do well, and they're all coming together at once. And you know, it's just they're really on a roll now. I mean, you walk Bill to get to Crawford, and you pay the price. You know, Joe Panik sees a pitcher with a slow delivery. Johnson, he steals second. He scores on a ground rule double. I mean, they're just playing really great, smart, and very familiar baseball.
And it's really happy out here at the yard. Steph Curry, the reigning MVP, was out here getting a lot of attention with his family last night. And, Bruce, this is the perfect opportunity to kind of to step on LeBron James. He goes to the Jake in Cleveland and wears a Yankees cap. Steph Curry comes here and just totally fans the flames of the Giants and the Bay Area. What do you think about that?
Well, yeah, that was very cool. I mean, I don't know what LeBron's doing with that whole Yankee thing, but I mean, the A's fans weren't real happy. But
no.
I mean, why? I don't know. Why does Curry have to be an A's fan? I mean, you like who you like, and the Giants are extremely likable right now. And it was great to see them down there in Larry Bear's choice front row.
Bruce, you had to see it, and I lead this lucky life when I walk in the ballpark, and I'm sitting in there, you know, chatting with Willie Mays about his first glove. It was a Bobby Dorr model. That I never knew that before. It's the first time he ever told me that.
Second baseman for the Red Sox.
Yeah, Hall of Famer. And all of a sudden, he's not Solly Hema, so it's Bobby Dorr.
So, I'm glad you got Solly in there, by the way.
Right. By the way, he's alive, and he's living in Texas, so I'm working on it. I'm really working
on it. I will no longer refer to him as the late Solly Hema.
No, not at all, unless he's late for dinner. But that's
he's the early Solly Hema.
Right. But, so I'm sitting in there, and next thing you know, Larry Bear walks in, and he says to Willie, "Hey, would you like to meet Steph Curry?" And, of course, Willie, you know, listens to everything. He is on top of every sporting event. It's amazing to me how he does it. And, of course, he said, absolutely. And next thing you know, here's Steph Curry coming in with his father and the wives and the brothers and sisters and everybody else. And all of a sudden, Larry says, two MVPs right in the same room. And it hit me that this kid is the MVP of the NBA.
Wow.
And, you know, it's a big deal. And then here's Willie, of course, the two-time National League MVP. And you could just see the eyes of both of them lighting up. And you know who was the most excited of everybody? It was Del Curry, the dad.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure Del, you know, saw a lot of Mays in his prime. And I'll tell you, Mays is probably the most electrifying athlete that we've ever had in the Bay Area. There's quite a bit of competition there, of course. But Curry's right up there. I mean, he is so exciting. Unbelievable brand of ball. And it's a really special time last night for him to be at the yard last night with the Giants totally on a roll and the Warriors about to go into the NBA Finals. That's a great moment.
Yeah, great Bay Area sports right now. I mean, really, it couldn't be better. Bruce Jenkins with us from the Chronicle. We had Jim Barr on today, and there are a lot of things written this week about the pitchers who are putting rosin on their arm with sunscreen and all that. And John Farrell says, look, it goes on all the time. I talked to Freddie Gonzalez. He'll be with us tomorrow. He says, you know, it does happen. I guess it happens all the time, and all of a sudden it's so blatant now that baseball's cracking down on it. If you did it surreptitiously, I guess they wouldn't say anything.
Yeah, which they did for years. I mean, it's been going on for years. I mean, I love Dallas Braden's comments.
Oh, right.
Joe Girardi said the same thing. He said, oh, everybody does this, you know. But it just became so commonplace that guys got a little sloppy. They're going out there with their arms glistening like they just put on some copper tone or something.
Yeah.
And that's just stupid, you know, especially in a night game, whenever there's any kind of glare and lights your arm just lights right up. It's like, come get me. But, you know, I'm glad it's out there because I always get so offended by people, you know, who just outraged over cheating in baseball. It's very common. I mean, you know, get angry about somebody who beats up on his kids or runs red lights or an embezzlement scheme. But I mean, these are grown men playing kids' games. They're looking for an edge. They're putting a little something on the ball. Maybe they're corking their bat or whatever. It's been the case for years. It's very predominant, and that's just how it is.
Yeah, it's interesting. Freddie Gonzalez will be with us tomorrow. I really enjoyed talking with him. He's a throwback to the old days. He's like Bobby Cox. He comes out on the bench early smoking a cigar and, you know, sitting there talking baseball. It really is a pleasure. He was the one who busted Will Smith in Milwaukee.
Right, yeah.
And he said it was so blatant, it was like they had a spotlight on the guy's arm.
Yeah, it's funny. He's not the kind of guy who's going to go looking for something and maybe go out there on a hunch. Like, you know, I could swear he's got something, like, inside his glove. I mean, that I think he would have felt he wasn't doing his job if he didn't go out there, if he'd missed it somehow, because it was so obvious.
But we don't hear about it on the Giants. You know, the A's talk about the station in spring training to teach you how to do it. It's never come up here other than with one of the Hall of Famers, Gaylord Perry.
That's right.
Well, I mean, but, you know, the Giants are a smart ball club, and I'm not saying all these guys do it, but, you know, it's really not so much about being able to throw this weird, wicked pitch that nobody can hit. It's more about getting a grip.
Right.
You know, and frankly, a lot of hitters would be glad to know that pitchers do have a good grip. If somebody's wild, that thing slips out of his hand, it's coming out your head. So the hitters, they aren't that upset about it. I think with a guy like Gaylord Perry, who literally, you know, had a spitball and going all the way back to Ewell Blackwell and the whole history of the game, they invent a pitch that's very hard to hit. But I think in most cases, it's just guys are looking to get a good grip.
Yeah. Bruce Jenkins with us. Ken Rosenthal had an interesting column just a couple of days ago. And, you know, the minor leagues split their season in half, you know, basically 140 games, whatever, 70 each. And he suggested baseball, Major League Baseball, should consider this. Now, we had it in the 81 strike season. And what you would do is have an 81-game season, two of them. And he had some formula for who would qualify for the playoffs and wild card and all that. But he said, look, if a team is out of it after 81 games, it's okay. You got the whole second half to try to get back in it. You get more interest. It's good for the game. I don't know. What do you think of that?
Yeah, my first reaction is, boy, I don't know. You're looking at so many years of doing it one way. I mean, I liked it best when there were eight teams in each league and 154 games, and you win the league and go to the series. That's it, you know. But, I mean, I can see the merits to that because, right now with the A's, they've had a little revival, but it seems like they're kind of in a lost season. You know, if you're 15 games out in the middle of June, and it's really pretty bad. And you think about Cubs fans over the years or fans of the Phillies or the Washington Senators when they were just routinely bad. And every year it just went sour before the first day of summer. You know, I mean, so I could see it. I can see the merits of it, but I wouldn't come out in favor of it. It's just too radical for me.
Yeah, it's, you know, it would just skew everything. We had a gentleman on, wrote a good book called Baseball Data. And he sort of, it's the Moneyball book of shifting. And talked a lot about the Pittsburgh Pirates who are coming in this week. They convinced Clint Hurdle, one of the all-time greats, you know, the scowling kind of manager guy, to use all this data. And the Pirates shift about 500 times more than anybody else. And we get to see him come in this week. So my question is, Rob Manfred doesn't like shifting. It's all over the place. How do you feel about something like this?
Well, Rob Manfred made a big mistake by saying we should just do away with them. And Carl Ravitch was interviewing him. He goes, really? Just no, you can't shift? And Rob said, yeah, why not? Then he just got hammered all over the country. I mean, because you just can't do that. Guarding the line is a shift technically, or coming in to play against a bunt would be considered a shift. The whole thing is totally ridiculous, but I think it's obviously more prevalent now than it's ever been. I mean, every left-handed dead pull hitter is Ted Williams up there now. And they're putting a big shift on him. But I don't know. I mean, it's very interesting, and it's especially interesting to watch guys react to it. Like a guy like Brandon Belt, he's been going to left field so often now that, you know, shifting against him is just not a good idea. And I really like a good, well-rounded hitter who can say, well, how about this? Or I'll just drop a bunt. And next thing you know, they're not shifting on you.
I know. They just won't do it. Isn't it amazing? Isn't it amazing?
Yeah.
It's like the hack-a-shack, Bruce. I mean, if you don't want to get hacked and you don't want to get sent to the free throw line, make your free throws.
Yeah. The Pirates are interesting because what they do is, you know, they don't take all of Clint Hurdle's old school instincts away from him. They go, listen, here's some numbers that you really ought to be paying attention to, and they all get together. And if Clint Hurdle really feels strongly about something that he saw, you know, with his eyes and with his instincts, you know, he'll be able to do that. He's still the manager of the club, but you know, he, to his credit, he embraces this stuff and doesn't just say, "Well, that's not the way I used to do it," you know.
No, it's
working. That's the perfect blend in all sports where you put the two together.
Yeah, and it's working.
Yep.
Yeah.
You know, and I can't wait to see them come in this week. You know, Giants haven't seen Washington, they haven't seen St. Louis, they haven't seen Pittsburgh. They haven't seen the Cubs. They haven't seen the Mets. You know, these are teams with pitching staffs that actually come out and play the game. And, they're, you know, they're really trying to do something as opposed to teams that maybe are struggling already. So it's going to this series with the Pirates, I think, is going to be a terrific series.
It's going to be great. And, you know, Ron Wotus is a master of the shifts. They shifted quite a bit last year, right up there, you know, among the teams that did it the most often. So that will be great. I mean, and, yeah, all those teams you mentioned are – especially interesting this year. Lawrence McCutchen, he was hitting about 210 3 weeks ago, and he said, "This is going to stop. I will guarantee you it won't be like this the rest of the way." And sure enough, he's climbing up around 270, and he, who knows, he might be at 300 by the time he gets here. But all those teams are really interesting. The National League as a whole is really interesting.
Yeah, we just haven't seen it yet, that's all.
Well, we can't get rid of the Dodgers.
No, yeah, really, other than the Dodgers, we haven't really seen the top pitching teams in the league, and that's usually the story. One last thought. Mark Bowman was on with us from MLB.com. He covers the Braves, and we threw the question at him. Best pitcher, not best pitcher, but best player in the National League. You know, I'm a big Bryce Harper. I'm always looking for support. And I thought, well, maybe he'll go Stanton. He went Lawrence McCutchen.
Andrew McCutchen. Yeah, did I call him Lawrence too?
I did. You know, I'm thinking of the fullback, the running
back. Yeah, the old running back. Yeah, McCutchen for sure, Stanton. Harper.
Yeah, he went Andrew McCutchen, and I kind of forgot about him, but you just brought it up again. This guy does quite a bit.
He's phenomenal. He's really, really dynamic, and he can get a team going on just pure energy and great defense and hitting. And you know, I the numbers aren't quite as dramatic, but I put Buster Posey in there.
Wow, interesting.
I think he's that valuable. Huh. I haven't given the question much thought, but that's four pretty good ones right there.
All right, maybe tomorrow we got a couple of things to talk about. We had a gentleman on who's creating a website where the fans can vote on what the manager should do. As far as lineups and things like that. And Bruce, you know, who knows in 20 years what's going to happen? You know, with all
I hope that's not one of them.
With all the technology. And also, I want to talk a little bit about the All-Star voting, some of the early returns on it. We can touch on that tomorrow. So have
a good
evening, and always a pleasure.
Right on, Bruce.
Thanks, guys.
All right. That is Bruce Jenkins of The Chronicle. Always a pleasure, huh?